The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, everyone. And what I'd like to talk about this morning is karma and intention. And these are very important topics. The Dalai Lama is quoted to have said that it's more important to understand the Buddhist teachings on causality, which is what karma is, than it is to understand such teachings as not-self and emptiness, which says a lot for us, especially Tibetan Buddhism. Emptiness is a very important teaching. And in the Zen teaching, they have this koan, this little story, teaching story, called Yakujo and the Fox. And the story goes this way, that Yakujo was a Zen master, the abbot of a monastery, and he would regularly give Dharma talks, and I guess it was open for people from the outside to come. And whenever he gave a Dharma talk, there was an old man who would come and to the talk and sit in the back, and then he would leave at the end. And after a long time of doing this, at one point, the old man stayed behind and went up to the abbot. And he said, "Once upon a time, I was the abbot of this monastery. Someone asked me the question, is an enlightened person subject to cause and effect, to karma? And I said, no. And because of that answer, I have now been reborn." He said, "I'm not really human, but now I've been reborn 500 times as a fox." So his karmic consequences of saying no. And now I come to ask you the question, is an enlightened person subject to cause and effect? And the abbot answered, Yakujo answered, "Enlightened person does not ignore cause and effect." And with that, the old man somehow woke up or something happened, and he said to the abbot, "Thank you, and tomorrow morning behind a certain boulder back in the forest up in the hills, you'll find a body of a fox that's died, and that'll be me. And please give this fox the burial that's due for a monastic." So in the morning, Yakujo gave instructions to his monks, and they went out and found the fox, and they came back and they buried him. Meaning that his many lifetimes as a fox came to an end when he got the answer. You don't ignore cause and effect. So the Dalai Lama says it's very important to understand it, and if you don't, watch out, you might be a fox for a long time. So the teachings on karma are very particular in the early teachings of Buddhism. And it's a teaching that puts a lot of emphasis on the importance of the present moment, which is one of the hallmarks of mindfulness practice, is to be present for our present moment experience. And not so much to enjoy it, but rather to be able to really use the present moment to its fullest potential for us. And one of the potentials for the present moment when we're really here is we see that we have choice. And then to be able to exercise that choice wisely. That if we don't slow down enough, don't pause long enough, or don't pay careful enough attention to what's going on, many of us will operate on automatic pilot. We'll just say things, we'll do things, we'll just kind of barrel ahead. And their things are done without much reflection. Or without any deeper kind of understanding of why we're doing it, what purpose we're doing it, what the consequences are. And now it could seem like a drag to stop, and pay more attention, slow down, restrain yourself from being impulsive. But there's a difference between front-loading and end-loading our life. If you front-load your life with more attention given to why you do things, the purpose, the intention for what you do, for the consequences that you're putting into place by what you do, then you can be more careful, and you don't have to take care of a lot of things afterwards. If you don't do that and are impulsive and say things without thinking about it or act on things that later you regret that you acted on, then the chances are that you'll do things that afterwards you have to, and the end loading, afterwards you have to spend a lot of time apologizing, defending, explaining, justifying, remedying, whatever you did. And so it might seem like a drag to front load your life, to spend more time, more care about what you do in the present moment. But actually you end up more likely not only saving yourself a lot of work later, sometimes save yourself from the kind of regrets that people will have for a lifetime, but also you put into place much better conditions for the movement of our life. We can start creating, doing those things which have beneficial consequences for our life. And that's the heart of the teachings of karma, that our actions have consequences, and we should be careful with the consequences. Now, the word karma is a big word, and so it is not some kind of theory about life having to do with multiple lifetimes. Often multiple lifetimes come into play in traditional Buddhist teachings around karma because the cause and effect continues through lifetimes, they say. But that's not the heart of what the teachings are about. The heart are the teachings about really being careful what you choose to do in this present moment. The teaching of karma is also not a teaching that provides cosmic justice. We have, for good reasons, and I think for wonderful reasons, some of us, a strong desire for justice, whatever that might understand. But it's sometimes hard to see that there's justice in this world. And so one of the ways to get justice is to have this teaching of karma. Justice will happen in the person's next lifetime. Okay, everything's back in order. Okay, I can rest assured that no good, lousy person's going to get it, you know, and not just get off, you know, scot-free for what this terrible thing the person did. And it'd be nice, maybe that's true, but I think we have a strong desire for justice, which might actually do us a disservice, because it might take us away from really dealing with the present moment, champion justice here in this lifetime for our society, but also to deal directly with our discomfort around what goes on and work with that. Because if we have an excuse to kind of put a salve over us, oh, later it'll be taken care of in the next lifetime, then I don't have to take care of this now. I'm kind of relieved of it and reassured or something. And I think it's more maturing to really kind of not look at some theory of justice over multiple lives, but really kind of work with what's here and look at it. And also the theory of karma has very little to do with explaining what's happening today based on what happened in the past. It's not a theory that everything you did in the past is the cause of what happened today. It doesn't put ultimate responsibility on everything that happens to you on what you did before. It's really a focus on our capacity for responsiveness, our capacity to be present and respond wisely and with choice. And mindfulness puts us in that seat. It puts us kind of in the driver's seat of caring and being patient and being attentive to what we do. And as I said, it might seem like work that's front-loading, but actually it has it's much less work in the long term if you do it. So the karma, our actions and the consequences of our actions can have... The word karma literally means action. it's kind of come down to mean sometimes the consequences of our action. People say that's the person's karma, and what they mean is that that's the fruit of their action. But technically, the word just means action. And so we want to pay attention to the action, and then actions have consequences. And where can we see the consequences of our actions? We can see the consequences right away. That there's a quality of what we say, what we do, even what we think, that has a valence. If we think with thoughts of hate, if we speak with words of hate, if we act with hate, if you really pay attention, it actually feels grating for the whole system. It's actually painful. It's a contraction. And so the consequence is right there. The problem with something like hate is that it's often focused on a purpose, on an object, the object of hate, and to get rid of something. And so the attention is outwardly directed, and with the hating person doesn't really pay attention to what the effect is in here for them. The effect is still here. It's uncomfortable for them, and that's often the unconscious or subconscious fuel for further hate. They're trying to get rid of something because they feel so bad. But part of the function of mindfulness is to turn the attention around and really see what is happening for us when we speak and act and even think in ways that are unskillful. We think with ill will, we think with greed, lust, when we think with or act with jealousy or spite or resentment or, you know, all kinds of things, criticism, self-criticism, and, you know, even something like guilt, which is a, you know, common enough emotion for people. These Buddhists say there's no really valuable purpose for guilt. There might be valuable purpose for regret, but guilt is a kind of a self-criticism that is painful. It's more of this contraction. So to start paying attention to the immediate effect, the simultaneous effect of what we're doing, the quality of that and the impact on us. There's also effect of our actions down through time, and we don't have to look at it too mysteriously. Karma is not some kind of metaphysical accounting system that exists someplace up in the sky, or I don't know where it exists, that is kind of keeping tabs on everything. But there are consequences, you know, that we can experience, you know, over time. And one of them is in the effect it has on our level of tension or relaxation. The muscles that get tight and the muscles that get softened and relaxed. The conditioning on our body by what we think and act and do might be minuscule in one act of speech or thought or action, but if we have the same chronic activity over and over again, the effect is can be huge over time. I've been told that Abraham Lincoln once said that by the time a man is 40, a person is 40, the person's responsible for their face because of all the holding patterns and attitudes that get carried along like that. And so, you know, there are these traces that are left behind. There are traces in our memory. And memory can go underground for a long time and then pop up. And one of the remarkable things of ongoing meditation practice is that sometimes long-lost, long-forgotten memories will return. And sometimes those are good memories. I've known people who've, you know, had forgotten about really important, pleasant, enjoyable memories of feeling safe or contented as children. And somehow those reappeared through meditation and became a source of strength for them. But also the opposite can happen, that people in meditation sometimes will remember things that were very unfortunate, the regrets they had or how they hurt people. And sometimes it comes with a big bang, like, boom, you know, uh-oh. What did I say 20 years ago? And I've known people who felt after 20 years have forgotten something they did and then felt they had to go make amends or apologize to someone. And so these things live inside our psyche as kind of memories, sometimes, you know, memories we don't remember. And at some point they can come up. And it's much better for them to come up and be resolved and work through, while you're still, relatively good health. It's like in meditation or something. Because sometimes when people are dying a little bit slowly, the inhibitions and the various conditions are such that those memories will come back then. And then we're maybe not so able to deal with them or work through them. And it's rather unfortunate to die, with regrets in our minds. So it'd be good to kind of clean up the act ahead of time. The other thing that our actions do, a consequence down through time, is they set conditions in place. And that conditioning affects further things. So, for example, the example of the hateful person who creates this contraction in their body that's uncomfortable, that's a condition that people then will, through that discomfort, will then react or push away or drink alcohol or do something to kind of unhealthy about this discomfort they're feeling. And the opposite can happen as well. We can do things that create good conditions for ourselves that help us feel content, happy, peaceful, more relaxed, generous, all kinds of wonderful ways of being in the world that feel good. The quality of your inner being is better. And those tend to generate a nicer ways of being or more supportive ways of being or good ways of being. And we are the custodian of the conditions. We're really the custodian of the quality of our inner life. And so you want to set up conditions that support a good quality of life. And so you want to make choices that put in place things that are conditioning or influences on you that are supportive and helpful and bring out the best in you, as opposed to doing those conditions that bring out the worst in you. And this can be as simplistic as very simple little choice. I've made this choice sometimes. If I'm going up to San Francisco, choosing to go on Highway 280 rather than 101. And because I've noticed that I actually feel better going up 280 than 101. And I arrive in San Francisco in a little bit, it's not a big deal, but it's a little bit better position, place and all that, and just nicer. And so I'm caring for these conditions and what influences they have on me. And so our actions are consequential, and the focus on karma, not ignoring karma, is to be careful with the choices we make in what actions we do. So, and actions in Buddhism also include what we think. And among what we think, in the mental world, is our intentions. So, Buddhism often puts a tremendous emphasis on intention, and sometimes seems to imply that the seed of intention is like a seed for these karmic consequences that come into play. Almost everything we do has some intention, some purpose, some motivation behind it. And it's kind of like the beginning for all our actions. And so to be able to get quiet enough or have a strong enough mindfulness to see what is our intention moment by moment, to see what our motivations are, is huge. So to begin looking at, and the quality of the intention has a big impact on all these things. And so to notice the quality of an intention, is the quality of intention something that you feel good about, that's supportive and nourishing, or is the quality of the intention something which is not nourishing, which is painful to have, or undermines us or drains us or something. To ask yourself the question, why am I going to say what I'm about to say? Why am I going to do what I'm about to do? Or I need to do something here, not what should I do, but what is the intention in which I want to do it? And to spend time in your life, taking the time to ask yourself that question, I'm about to do something, what purpose do I want to do it for? What am I trying to accomplish here? Can really awaken a richer, deeper, more valuable way of living in the world. And here I'll give you another example, which is, again, pretty simplistic, perhaps ordinary. And that is, because I've done this, I got to go shopping for my family for food. So what's the intention? Someone asked me, why are you going shopping? Because my family needs food. Okay, that's nice. Okay, you learn some information. Doesn't really say anything particularly deep. But before I go shopping for food, I can ask myself that. What's the intention that you're doing this for? And I want to care for my family. I want them to feel when they come home that they're being met with support, with care, with love, that there's food there for them. But you know, there's actually, I could have other intentions. I could go to the market to buy food, and my intention is to every person who somehow I encounter who's willing to look at me, that I want to kind of meet them in a way that's going to make their life a little bit better. You know, I don't know, you know, so that's my intention, is to go there and make a difference for people. I've been grumpy and gone to the market with my shopping cart and like all these people in the way and, you know, I'm not going to look at anyone and, you know, like, you know. And, you know, I probably didn't create a very good wake behind me. And I've gone to the market and I'm surprised by, you know, sometimes by looking around and being present and being as interested to connect to the people around me as I am with the food. And it's not so dangerous because most people don't want to connect. But it was kind of nice. It's nice for me. And, you know, and so then, and now that my wife is mostly gone these days, I'm going to the market early in the Safeway, because Safeway's open 24 hours. So I go super early in the morning. And it's kind of fun. There's all these people stocking the shelves and there's not so many people in line. And so I've gotten to know some of their clerks, because they're the same clerks. There are only a few clerks there, checkout clerks. And so I'm getting to know some of them by name and you know, having little conversations. And it's a very different feeling of, you know, of and I mean, because they're stocking the shelves, these stockers are, you know, apologizing because they have stuff boxes in the aisles. And so it gives me a great chance to say, no, it's not a problem. And it's great, you know, have a little exchange. And I kind of like it. And so I could have the intention to go and connect with people or make a difference in that world a little bit. So by giving some thought to it, I enliven, I enrich what I'm doing with nice purposes. Whether I'm successful or not, or how successful, you know, that's a topic. But the fact that I can go into the market with that kind of liveliness, to me, is actually feels quite good. And if all I'm doing is buying food for my family, if that's, you know, there's no other reason. They sent me. I, you know, I don't want to go, but I'm going to go because they told me to. you know, that's a pretty limited world to live in. And so can you expand your world through care and attention to your intention? The world of intention is also a very significant world to consider. What are the priorities that you have? What intentions do you give priority to? Or what intentions are central to how you want to live your life as a whole? Is there a larger purpose for your life that you have? Sense of meaning, sense of value, sense of direction that you have. And I think that it's a wonderful thing to spend time regularly reflecting, what is my deepest intention? What is the deepest purpose that I have for this human life that I have? It's an amazing thing. One of the consequences for me of doing all these years of Buddhist practice is I don't take being alive for granted. I don't take being conscious for granted. I think it's just amazing that this the whole show exists. That the fact that I'm conscious, I just find amazing. And so, to care for this and ask a question: what is my deepest intention? So I did that for at least a year. Every day, I would ask myself that question. Sometimes multiple times through the day, and it was fascinating to watch how over the year that it morphed and changed. sometimes it was exactly the same, sometimes it changed and over time. And one of the ways it changed over time is it kind of felt like I went deeper and deeper. It was kind of like I would come with an intention, and I would say, you know, yes, and what's the intention for that intention? Or where does that come from? And then if I had a negative intention, I wanted to live without fear, I always found it really important to say, well, what is the positive version of that? Or if I had no fear, then what would be my intention? And to go deeper and deeper. And there's many things that could be an answer to that. And some care needs to go around answering a question, what is my deepest intention? So we don't kind of bring with us societal ideas that we've inherited somehow of what a human being's life is supposed to be like. One of the great intentions is not what we do with our life, like some great career or something, but rather the intention of how we're going to live this life. And that how we live, we're going to live with compassion or care or generosity, or we're going to focus on practice and kindness. And how we are might be the organizing principle for our life more than, you know, saving the world or some way. But to keep kind of looking down, look into your heart, into your heart. A variation that I did for myself for this, what is my deepest intention, which was very interesting for another year, was I asked myself, if I'm going to die tonight, how would I live this day? What would be important for me? What was the most important thing to do if this was my last day? And that kind of put a mirror on my life that was very powerful. And again, because I did it for a year, I kind of kept morphing and changing and looking, and as I looked at it, and I thought it was really valuable for me. So to be careful with intention, to develop a skill and the ability to look at why we do things, the purpose for why we do it, the motivation, what we're intending as we do it, is very useful. Many years ago, I met a family who told me that one of the most common questions they had in the family for each other was, when they were talking about something, was, what are you intending? What are you intending in doing this or saying this? And so kind of like plumbing deeper, you know, dropping deeper. What is this going on here? And so to combine these ideas of intentionality and our deepest intention and the idea of karma, that intention is an action, and it's an action which has consequences. And because it's a psychological state or psychological condition, our intentions, the causality, the cause and effect, plays out in a variety of ways, but in and of itself plays out psychologically. If we act on an intention, then the physical action in the world plays out in all kinds of other ways. But just simply having an intention that we dwell in and stay with, it's not you're not off scot-free. It has consequences for you. It conditions you. It sets memories in you. All kinds of things go on. When I was young, I've had strong greed for things that stayed in there over and over again. And I kind of look back at some of those things with regret. What was I doing all that time, spending that time? And I don't think it was didn't condition me in a good way. It didn't set up my mind or set up my heart in a healthy kind of way. I never acted on them, but still, it had an effect on me. So intentionality, the intentions we want, even if we don't act on them, and they're more like wishes or hopes or something we might have, are consequential in the psychological unfolding and development growth that we have. And so how do we care for it? So one of the ways is through meditation. Meditation, for some people, is a really wonderful way of getting the mind just quiet enough, it doesn't have to be dramatically quiet, but more quiet than usual, in such a way that we can start caring for the quality of our mind, the intentions of the mind, the desires of the mind that are operating. Maybe in meditation we learn a lot about letting go of what arises, and we can drop deeper. But also in meditation, as we get calmer, we have access to deeper wellsprings of intentionality, deeper wellsprings of emotions and values and ways of being that can be the source of very skillful and helpful intentions that we have, that are much harder to tap into if the mind is agitated and running around and being busy. And so to sit quietly enough to be deeper in touch with ourselves, to become still enough to see the points of choice that we have. And one of the choices we have in meditation in particular is a choice to let go. Not this. I don't need to continue this strain of thought. This is not helpful. This is not a useful thought to have. And that ability to let go is not just to let go of something, but might also be to allow ourselves to let go into a deeper place inside. To let go into a deeper listening. What's really here? And then over time, to be able to ask yourself the question, what is my deepest intention? When I did Zen practice many years ago, one Zen teacher defined Zen practice as the practice of purifying our intention. Then that was kind of a very thought-provoking idea. That's what the practice was, purifying or clarifying our intention. And I kind of like to think that our intention, the intentions we live our life in, are so preciously important that we want to really attend to it and care for it well and let it be a wealth, inner wealth that we have, the intentionality. And don't have your intentions and what you want your life based on be confused with how successful you are in living on them. Sometimes it's just powerful that we're living on these good intentions. And the so, you know, whether it plays out well in the life or not, that can sometimes be secondary to the benefits we get from knowing that we're resting and dwelling in these wonderful, good qualities that we're capable of having. And finally, I'll say that I've advised people that, I'm a meditation teacher. It's like what I've I've been doing this for years, so you'd think that that's important, right? Meditation. And it is. And with that as a contrast, I've sometimes said to people, it's actually more important than meditating, is to ask yourself regularly, what is your deepest intention? Is that important? So don't ignore cause and effect. Or you'll be a fox. Thank you.